You are listening to EP Culture Beat, the underground source of El Paso, Texas.
Bionicles, it's your main man Sucio, aka Cerberus, aka Thought Boy Supreme, aka Lesbian Wolverine, aka Cobija Chan, aka ex-boyfriend of everybody's mom. Welcoming you back to another episode of EP Culture Beat, your source for the arts and culture underground of El Paso Juarez. Now today I want to start out with a very special shout out to the Alamo Draft House at 12351 Pelicano. If you appreciate film and arts, especially Mexican cinema, you need to go check out that amazing collection of frame posters, all the lucha aesthetic, but really it's all about the big show. That place reminds me of the old school operatic theaters of original cinema. Absolutely a local gem. You know, make sure you check them out. 12351 Pelicano. Thank you, Alex. Now, on today's episode, our next guest is so talented and so skillful that he's living out all of our childhood dreams of not just releasing toys and figures for big name companies like Hasbro and Mattel, but he's coming out with really, really, really special custom figures. Now, before I get any further, I just want to say, you know, thank you for being on the show. Creator, sculptor, painter, and all-around toy and action figure genius, Joe Amado. Thank you, Joe Amado.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. This is great.
Thank you, Papa. I appreciate you. That whole page was the intro. All these other ones are questions.
He was
wondering why I had this big book in front of me. Now, what was your favorite Happy Meal toy line that you got as a kid?
Happy Meal toy? Oof, that's a good one. Eesh, let me think. They did like in the 90s, they had a Power Ranger Happy Meals, and it was like one of the first times that McDonald's actually had action figures.
Yeah.
And that was really cool, having the White Ranger. But I also remember the Chicken Nuggets guys.
Oh, those were the best.
Yeah, like we finally got like the little, because I used to watch the commercials, you'd be like, those are kind of cool, I want the toys.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, there you go. And then they made the Chicken Nugget guys.
Mickey just showed up with the Dracula.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. So that was really cool. I always loved them when they did like actual toys, you know, like action figures and stuff. Not so much of like things that spin or pop, or I like the little toys.
They didn't give you a QR code for an online redemption for a yeah. skin.
Right.
Like nowadays. Well, you know, once again, thank you for being on the show, Papa. I appreciate you. I know you're busy. You do a bunch of stuff. You're working with all these big name studios. What inspired you to get into toy crafting?
Oh, I mean, I've loved toys since I was a kid. Forever. And it was actually, I was always making my own things, my own creations, little creatures and stuff. And I think I read, I don't know if it was Toy Fair magazine, back in like the late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. And they had an article about these sculptors that made toys. Mm-hmm. And it just hit me right there. Like, you can make a living at this. You can make toys. There's people behind the scenes making this stuff. And that just blew me away.
I mean, you're a young man. You got to be younger than me, at least by a few years. So how old were you at this point?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not that young. I just turned 47. So.
Válgame.
Yeah.
Ni tienes canas.
I got him.
No, he doesn't. I swear. Look at that. That hair is glistening.
It's I get to be a perpetual kid, so it helps.
Yeah, that happiness really takes away the canas.
Yeah, the stress of like, oh, I got to pay the mortgage, you know.
So, okay, I'm going to ask you this just to segue into the next part. What was your favorite toy line growing up?
Oof. It'd have to be Star Wars, obviously, because of all the spaceships and the little figures and stuff. And it was one of the first toy lines that had almost every character from the movie. Yeah. And that blew me away, because you could really build the world and have all the spaceships. And just, I mean, that was amazing for me. Definitely Star Wars. I think what my favorite cartoon, though, growing up was Thundercats. And that always bothered me because the toys were so ugly. You know, when Thundercats came out, I think that was like the toys was like 87. So I was a little bit older then. I was like already in my getting close to my teens, I think. I don't remember now. And I remember being so disappointed in the toys. I was like, oh, man, the show's so good, and the toys are, like, so lame. So I'm really excited now that there's a company called Super 7 that's redoing the Thundercats. Oh, and they're doing an amazing job.
Well, I mean, I know you did the battle tank.
Yeah, I did the Thunder Tank for him.
I mean, that's, first of all, congratulations. That's amazing. I saw the design. I saw the detail. For a fan to, obviously, somebody who's not a fan but a creator, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Now, how long does it take to actually make a design like that, get approved, you know, sculpting, build? Like, I mean, what is the time frame on something, a project like that?
It usually depends. Usually we'll have a meeting and we'll discuss what they want, what it should have, what it should do, features and size and stuff like that. And that'll take a couple of weeks. And then, but by the time we start sculpting to the time we have a finished model, it could be a couple months, you know, because we're doing everything in 3D now. So what I do is we sculpt it and I have another group help me with engineering.
Yeah.
And try to make it so the parts move, the things go together, and it's easy for tooling, which is for production. So once we get that, then we hand it over to Four Horsemen Studios. We hand it over to Super 7. And then they have their factory engineers try to figure out, okay, does this work? Does this not work? And then you have to do the whole safety. Is it going to break? Is it going to cause small parts or whatever? And then...
am I going to swallow Boba Fett's missile?
Yeah, there you go. So you want to avoid that. And then they start tooling, which is making the metal tool.
Mold
that actually you inject the plastic into it. And that takes at least 30 to 40 days to make the tool. And
are you talking about a year?
Oh, yeah.
More than a year.
You're looking at least a year from start to finish, especially on the Thunder Tank. It's taken a little bit longer because it's so huge. It's like 4 feet by like 3 feet almost. It's ginormous.
You had the Lionel figure next to it.
Yeah.
And it was like a baby.
It looked like a 3¾-inch figure, but it's a 7-inch figure. It's huge. It's huge. I mean, the thing, I remember when we first started talking about it and they said, well, this is the size we want it. I said, I printed it out and like pasted it together out of, you know, just printouts and took a picture and showed them, this is actual scale. Are you sure you guys want to do this? And they're like, yeah, let's do it. And they were all, okay, we'll do it. And so the price tag on that thing was like $500.
I was about to ask. I was afraid of asking, but it really is for collectors.
Yeah, really is. It's a really high end piece, but it's, and you know, the good thing is that there was a lot of partners on it. So like if you do it through Sideshow offers payment plans.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of cool. And then you get some points from them that you can redeem. So
now while we're on the subject, and this, I was going to ask this later, but I'm asked this right now. What is your opinion on action figure toy collectibles becoming commodity for investment? Like people are buying stuff up just to have it as part of their portfolio.
Here's the thing. When we were kids, right, in the 70s, when they had Star Wars figures, we all opened them. There was no such thing as a collector. We all opened everything. So everything, right? There was like walls of toys and all that stuff got opened. So if you were to find something now that is still sealed, well, yeah, it's worth money because it's rare. Now the market, there's so many collectors. So it's kind of like a fake market, right? So it's only what's hot right now. And then everybody wants it. So people are willing to pay like $60 for a $20 figure. But then in a couple of months, people forget about it or they make more.
They re-release it
and then it's not worth anything. So it's more of a like fashion, right? It's like really hot right now and it's worth money. But 20 years from now,
It's good for the Instagram, but it's not good for my soul.
Yeah, no, it's not. You're not going to get rich off of collecting toys because there's so many collectors now that are hoarding them and saving them. And so, you know, it's more of a scalper's market where it's a quick buck, you know, like, okay, this figure's popular. He's $20. I can sell him for 60. And that's how they make their money. But putting them aside and hopefully they'll be worth money. Nah, not anymore.
I absolutely agree with you. And, you know, thank you for saying that because, you know, fuck scalpers. Let's just say we all got a problem with them scalpers and stuff coming out. Now, you're doing Thundercats, the battle tank, but then you're also doing a custom-made Mumra. And, you know, I'm looking at your stuff. This is, what, 2 years ago, three years ago? So you're doing a custom-made Mumra with the sarcophagus, but that's you. This is your custom. This is your studio. You're making these handmade, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think Mummer was made by Mattel. The license was by Mattel, and then they Super 7 got the license. They took it from Mattel. And
oh, so you're license over. of license.
Well, I'm not licensed. I'm doing myself bootleg.
Yeah, so, yeah. Right? So,
I mean, I'm working with them, but that like so they made the Mumra figure, and I was like, awesome Mumra figure, and so then I made myself the sarcophagus that you know that he sleeps in. And then I posted it on Instagram, and everybody, all my fans and friends are like, hey, I want one. And I was like, okay. So then I made a mold, and I started casting them. And I make them myself. Mm-hmm. I can only make, like, one or two a day.
Yeah.
And so, like, if you want one, hit me up, and then, you know, I'll sell you one. And but I make, like, at the most 20.
Yeah.
Right? Just a little bit. And it just kind of pays for the materials. And but it's more just to get something to the fans, you know, because for a while we had no Thundercat toys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we had nothing. So I was just kind of making my own stuff and just kind of selling it. But, you know, just, but it's just for us. It's not a money making.
But even so, people like me, and I'm very sure people who are listening to this appreciate that. Because I remember as a kid, I think Thundercats was the first thing I bought. And the second thing was like Ninja Turtles. But I remember that sarcophagus, or what was it, the three statues?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was like the Mumra set.
Yeah.
And it was like so shitty.
Yeah.
It was like a few stickers. So bad. And I look at yours and I'm like, that's amazing. So, yeah, you know, from once again, coming from a collector, and I appreciate that. Absolutely. But on the technical aspect, how difficult is it to make that mold? I mean, you're making these molds in your house, so you sculpt first.
Yeah, so I got two ways of doing it. I prefer traditional. I'm a traditional guy, and I love putting my hands on clay and whatever. But I can also do 3D. But for the sarcophagus, I did it in clay. And then, you know, I just use a pressure casting system to make molds, make silicone molds. Then you just pour in the resin and it hardens. Take it out, clean it, and I paint it by hand and clean them by hand. And so it's just, you know, like a little garage type of studio thing.
Oh, but you're putting money. I mean, how much money does it take you? That's a lot of tools.
Yeah, I probably have, you know, a couple grand in equipment and then supplies. Anytime I buy resin, the resin's about $30, you know, so, and I can make maybe like two sarcophagus out of there.
Yeah.
So it piles up. Yeah, so usually when I sell them to just my buddies and friends or whatever, just people will follow me. It's just to cover the costs of the supplies and stuff, just so we can all have it.
Do you have any tips for a beginner, amateur toy maker, crafter, sculptor, painter? You know, now that we're talking about this, obviously you're a very intrinsic work. You know, you look at your stuff, super detailed, amazing. But let's say somebody like me, you know, I want to make something. Like, what would you recommend me? What would you say? Oh, where do you start? Where's your basic start off point?
My son is, he's 8. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he wants to get into animation.
Okay.
And he's trying to do his own little YouTube videos or whatever. And I tell him the same thing that I've told everybody is, you got to draw.
Yeah.
You got to start with the drawing. You got to be able to draw. You got to be able to put an idea on paper and show me and sketch it out first and then go from it. So, you know, if you want to do toy design and whatever, you should do it, you know, but learn your hand skills, learn how to draw, learn how to sketch, learn how to sculpt with clay. And then once you have those fundamentals, then 3D will go fast because you understand the concept. And you can start learning how to do 3D, and it's just a matter of a program. I have a buddy, local artist, Gino Yavada. He amazing sculptor, like he blows me away. He does like monsters, and he does them out of clay. But he decided to pick up ZBrush, which is a 3D program, and in a couple months he got it because he knows how to sculpt already.
Yeah.
So it's just learning the program; it's just another tool.
Mm-hmm.
So I would tell anybody, you know, who wants to start traditional, learn how to draw, learn how to sketch, learn how to mold stuff and build stuff out of clay, and then go from there. And then just, you know, just get your work out there, Instagram, even Facebook, sort of just show your work and get your name out there and just do a little bootleg stuff, you know, and get your name out there. And that's what happened to me. I was just doing customs and I got hired by a magazine called Toy Fair in the late 90s to do customs for them. Mm-hmm. And then that led to me working on a TV show called Sweet J Presents, which later became Robot Chicken.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then I was working on Robot Chicken, helping Toy Fair. And a toy company out of Florida saw my work and they were like, hey, come work for us. And so I moved to Florida. I went to go work for them. And, you know, that's how it started. But it was just getting my work out there. And
don't be afraid to tag. Don't be afraid to show the world you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and just be prepared for the criticism. You mm-hmm. know, like I get so much, and you just got to build the thick skin, because people are like, you know, that's not show accurate, or in episode 37, you're like, yeah, I know, but, you know, I was like, it's for me.
It's for me, bro. Get out of here.
Yeah, it's for me. It's okay.
It's my own episode.
Yeah, I remember I did a panel at San Diego Comic-Con, mm-hmm. and at the time I was working for a toy company called Jazzverse, and we had Mortal Kombat, and they were asking questions, fans were asking, and one of them was like, how do you account for the discrepancies in Scorpion's armor from MK10 to MK9? Because the version that you got, and I was like, what?
I didn't even work on that one, bro.
I was like, we're lucky we got the figure. Like, yeah. You know, like, but that's, you just got to be able to take it and understand, okay, you know, some fans, like, I'll make something for, I don't know, whatever. Like, I just did a Doom Patrol thing. But there are fans that are like, hey, that's not show accurate. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. No, but, you know, it's just, I'm just trying to do it for fun, like, and just get it out there.
It really sounds like the action figure world is kind of cutthroat, because, you know, you have everybody competing against each other, but is everybody working or competing against each other? Because you got, like, so many people going on trying to do different styles, right?
Yeah, no, you know what, actually, it's really cool, because the toy industry on the creative side is very supportive. Super supportive. Everybody, yeah, there's a couple of guys that are, you know, they don't want to talk to you or whatever, and they'll just be like, you know, I don't want to tell you my secrets or my techniques or whatever. But, you know, for the most part, I'm going to say 90% of the people out there creating stuff are, like, super cool. I did a panel at EPCon, and I got to meet a bunch of creative guys doing stuff now. And so that was really cool, because they're like, hey, man, let's meet up. Let's talk about ideas. And I'm like, yeah. And that's how everybody is. That's what's really cool about the toy industry. Everybody's really open and like, yeah, let's all share, because we know it's a small industry, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Let's help each other out. And if I am offered a job and I feel this guy could do better, I'll say, well, you should work with this guy, or somebody will recommend me. And it's just, it's really cool. It's really nice.
That's fantastic. That's nothing like the music industry.
Oh no. Yeah. No, most of the toy industries tries to support each other on the art side. Yeah. And yeah, there's forums on, not forums, but like groups on Facebook, private groups, where it's just toy designers and toy creators, and they're just helping each other. Just kind of like, hey, do you have a resource for this? Can anybody help me paint this up and stuff like that? And it's really amazing. So
who's blowing your mind right now when it's designing, people who are designing? Because I know you, I mean, you're working with kind of big name studios, really great studios. And then at the same time, like, you jump to like Hasbro, Mattel. Like, how did that happen? Let me just ask, the who's your designer like that you're looking out for?
Oh,
right now?
Oh man, I think that I'm lucky that I get to work with them, but for sure the Four Horsemen. Yeah, Four Horsemen's design studio, they do amazing work. Some of their stuff, they just released a new line that they're gonna do. It's like a space themed guys, and Cosmic Legions, I think is what they're calling them. Mm-hmm. They look amazing. Yeah. They look super amazing. Those guys have always blown me away. And a lot of stuff that's being done by like NECA.
Yeah.
NECA's always been one of the awesome art houses, mm-hmm, when it comes to toys, but their stuff is like really cool. They're doing some obscure stuff, which I love. They just released a figure for Gargoyles.
Yeah.
That cartoon from the 90s. They just showed Alf.
Yeah.
So going to do a superposable Alf figure. Like, that's awesome. Like, who, you know, like, but I get excited. I'm like, cool.
What do you collect right now? What do you collected in
mainly,
your past?
Thundercats for sure.
Okay.
I still do some Star Wars, but more the 3-inch guys, not so much the 6-inch guys.
The old school, the 79 to 83.
Yeah. I like those guys. And anything really kind of obscure. Okay. I like that stuff for sure. Any like designer toys or designer vinyl, or, you know, some of the stuff the guys are making that they just kind of make them themselves. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cool stuff out there.
Oh, absolutely. So do you focus on posability or detail or what tickles your fancy when it comes to a toy?
I think for me, it's the sculpt. Okay. I like the sculpt, and I like joints, but sometimes I don't like joints because joints can break up a sculpt. So for me, guys that know how to incorporate the joints into the sculpts is amazing, you know, because like when Marvel Legends started, mm-hmm, I think in the 90s, they kind of, I like the characters, but they were so articulate. They look like robots.
Yeah, okay.
Right? They lost the feel of the anatomy and of humans. And now they've kind of like refined that, and they're doing a lot of neat stuff and hiding joints, hiding pins. Mm. So they look more seamless.
Yeah.
The Four Horsemen are doing an amazing job with that, where they've transitioned to making the pins where the arms go and the connect, hiding those, hiding the joints. So they look more streamlined. And that's amazing to me.
That sounds fantastic, actually, because, you know, like you said, you were talking about NECA and all that stuff, and you look at them and you're like, man, like this is a lot of. As little kids, we had a block.
Yeah. It, like the head and the arms and the legs moving. Maybe. That was about it. And that's about it. And you were just like.
Power kick.
Yeah.
That's all you had.
That's it.
So what is the most difficult design that you have created? Like what was the one that just gave you, just roughed you up?
Well, for sure, working on the Thunder Tank mm-hmm. was a bit of a challenge because I'm not an engineer.
Okay.
And so I know how it should look, and I was trying to make it look like that, and I know what the cartoon looks like, and I'm a fan, so I want it to look like the toy, so mm-hmm. I can, you know, like the cartoon, so I can have it. But the engineering part of it really, really got to me, because one of the things that the Thunder Tank had to do was open up, and the mouth had to open up, mm-hmm. and the claws come out.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
When it did that, the mouth kept on hitting the
cockpit. Front,
yeah, the cockpit, and so like I had to figure out how to fix that
yeah.
and how to do. And so that was really challenging of, okay, try to make it work, and had to put on like my engineer hat, which is hard, you know, but because I do all my math like in Photoshop. I'm not, you know, I'm horrible.
Oh, you're doing math?
Yeah.
Nobody like, told me you had to know math.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, oh man, I should have paid attention in school. Stay in school, kids.
Yeah, shout out, kids. If you want to be a toy maker, you got to be an engineer of some sort.
You're going to use tons of math. I was like, nobody told me. I thought I was going to draw everything. But yeah, you need tons of math. And so I struggle with that a little bit.
I'm just ask a quick question about this Thundercat tank. Do the figures actually fit in there? Because I remember in the original one, those figures didn't fit in Thunder Tank at all. Like they were like hanging out.
No,
like,
absolutely. On the front, you can fit two guys to drive it.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And in the back, you can fit six guys. And then it opens up. Yeah, it opens up. And then they had like a turret gun, and then that pops out, and so you could put the figures on there to shoot, and then you could put it back in and then close it all up.
When is this one gonna be? Did you already get you already finished pre-orders?
Oh, yeah, we're
and
done
everything
with it. And so I think the factory's tooling it now, so we're about about a year away. I think
you're a year away.
Yeah, from actually getting it.
And people pre-order, and like, yeah, you just gotta sit there.
You just gotta. That's the hard part about, you know, toys these days is like all there's all these like Kickstarters and pre-orders, mm-hmm. and you gotta pay for it up front, and then just wait a year. And
yeah,
it's kind of cool in a way because you forget, and all of a sudden you're like, oh wow, I forgot about
it. It comes
this.
In the mail.
Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of lame also that you're paying for it up front.
Just backpedaling a little bit. What is the easiest design that you worked on? What just came out like that, slid out of your hands?
Oh, eesh, let me think. There's been so many because, again, I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, there's like two parts of it. One part is a production guy that's like, okay, we need to get this done under budget and make a thing. And then I have the nerd that's in me that's like, yeah, but it needs to do this and it needs to have a sword and it needs to. And I'm like, yeah, okay, okay. So a lot of it, I already have it. You know, when they tell me, hey, we need to do this. I'm like, yeah, boom. And we could get it done I can get it done pretty quick. So there's been a lot of stuff. Having the knowledge and being a nerd helps. In the TV show, he had like a brown thing. You got to put that, like that. So that helps a lot.
Where's the light going to come out of?
Yeah. You're like, he's got to have a sword, the big one and the little one. And she, like stuff like that. So having that knowledge helps a lot.
Absolutely. So Toy Fair. So I feel like was that your Hard Knocks? Like you came out of making customs into Toy Fair, and then you started working with studios, and then you started working with Mattel, or how was that transition?
I was working for Toy Fair from, I'm going to say 95 to about 97.
All right.
Or no, probably like even 2000s, right when the magazine closed. I was still doing stuff for them. And then paying your dues, I got hired by this company, Jazzwares in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is awesome. I'm working in the toy industry.
Move out there?
Yeah, I moved to Florida. Mm-hmm. I lived over there for about 8 years.
But you're from here?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
From here, I came back. My girlfriend at the time, I was like, hey, I got this job offer in Florida. She's like, I go, you want to go? She's like, well, let's get married. I'm like, let's get married. We got married, and pretty much the next day we took off to Florida.
Is that right?
Yeah. So
are you still married?
Yes, we are.
Hey, congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been married like 21 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, it helped us. It helped us because when we were in Florida, it was just her and I. Mm-hmm. You know, like you fight, there's nowhere to go. She can't call her mom, or, you know, there's no suegra. So I'm like, we just got to figure it out.
Amá me gritó.
Yeah. You know, mira lo que me está haciendo. She can't do that. No, we had to work it out.
You don't want to go in those sinkholes and disappear.
Yeah. So that helped us. But anyways, when I got to Jazzwares, I was super excited because I'm finally working for a toy company. And I thought, this is going to be amazing. I'm going to do all this cool stuff. And for the first 3 years, all I worked was on Disney Princess.
Is that right?
That's it. I was doing Disney Princess brushes, Disney Princess alarm clocks, Disney. I was just like, oh, my God.
I think I have a few of those.
Probably. And then I worked on Hannah Montana, and then I was like doing a lot of girl properties, and it's cool. Like, it's still toys, right? Like, at the end of the day, sometimes I would be like, oh, I don't want to work on this. And I'm like, hey, you're working at a toy company. You could be digging ditches.
Okay, yeah.
Like, relax. And so I was like, all right. So then finally we got Mortal Kombat. And when Mortal Kombat came, I was just like, I want to do it. And I put my name in the hat, and I said I could sculpt it, I could design it, I could do the packaging, and they were like, okay. And they gave
did
it
you
to
do
me.
Every single figure?
No. I did a couple, and then we hired, because they work really fast. Okay. Jazzwares at the toy company, you know, when they do a figure, I can do one for myself, okay. But they want to do a wave. They want to do like 6 figures. And
so which ones did you work on?
I sculpted Goro.
Yeah, yeah.
Goro was the main one that I did.
I think then, I remember that one. It was really trippy, huh?
Yeah, it was cool. And then I did a lot of the paint masters.
Oh, okay.
So once the sculptors, we had several sculptors helping us. Once the sculptor gave it to us, I painted it. And then we would send those to China and say, okay, this is what it should look like.
How many prototypes do you have in your collection right now?
I, you know, that's the thing. That's one of the saddest things is that you have to send those prototypes to China. And they use those to make like the clamshell or the packaging, or they use it to make the tools, and they destroy them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They destroy them. So
that's a shame.
Yeah, I got to keep very few.
No, yeah. You're hurting my feelings right
I
now.
Know. I had to. But when I first got there, though, they had just finished doing, I don't know, Mega Man or something, and they threw away all these prototypes in the trash. And I was like, you guys crazy? And I jumped in the dumpster, and I was pulling them all out.
Yeah?
And, yeah, and I kept them all.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and after that, anytime that I could keep something, I kept it. Because, yeah, of course.
What's the coolest? What's your opinion, the coolest thing you have in your collection right now?
When I was helping the Four Horsemen on Masters
of the Universe. I keep throwing up that Ric Flair. Woo!
when we were working on He-Man, Masters of the Universe.
Yeah.
What
year is this?
This was 2005, 2006.
Okay, all right.
We were going to do they were 7-inch figures. And at one point they proposed doing 4-inch figures. And so I did a prototype for them and I still have it. So that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Little four inch He-Man. So that's really cool.
Tell me about the Doom Patrol customs. Cause I mean, that's a big name. HBO Max.
Oh yeah.
You know, shout out Brendan Fraser. You're a real one. I love that guy. But, I mean, your stuff is being featured at the premiere.
Working from Robot Chicken, I did a lot of stuff with movie studios, and I did a lot of stuff with Comedy Central.
Mm-hmm,
they
mm-hmm.
had a show in the 2000s called Reno 911,
mm-hmm.
and they did a spoof commercial for toys. And so they hired me through the Toy Fair guys. The Toy Fair guys recommended me,
mm-hmm.
and I did Reno 911 figures. And that just kind of kept my name in that industry. Because when the HBO guys called me, they were like, yeah, you're the one that did the toys for Reno 911, right? And I was like, yeah, that was me. They're like, yeah, we want to do some figures of Doom Patrol for the promos.
Mm-hmm.
Can you help us? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. You know,
but they're not going to use your figure to actually make Doom Patrols.
No, it's funny because they gave me 2 weeks to make 5 figures. They sent me all the pictures.
That's it?
That's it, 2 weeks. So I was like getting after it fast. And... And, like, I charged them a pretty penny.
I bet.
HBO Max, right? And I only got 2 weeks. Like, you know, I don't have to do this for, like, $25. And so I did them. I sent them off. We overnighted them. And they got them. And they're like, yeah, these look great. And we'll send you the promo spot once it's done. I was like, okay. So they sent me the promo spot. And I watched it. And I didn't see the figures. And I was like, huh? They're not in here. And so then I slowed it down. And at the very beginning, right before the Doom Patrol logo comes out,
yeah.
they show like four or five figures like really quick.
Yeah.
And that's it. So they show up for maybe a second.
Is that right?
Yeah, in the promo. And that's it. That's all they're using them for. Just for the promos, just real quick for a little montage.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Like, does that make you feel, do you feel irked in some way?
Nah, or, I mean, not at all. I mean, because I got paid, right? And yeah, it's cool that I got to work with HBO Max, and it's cool that I got to work with those guys. And there was a lot of input from a lot of people, and you know, the creators of the show had input. So it's really cool. That's, as a project, awesome. It's really awesome to be working with HBO Max and somebody that big. But I think that's how it works in the movies and movies when you work with movies or TV. You know, these guys, these prop makers, or these guys that do these costumes spend hours and hours and months on this stuff, and it gets 5 seconds of screen time. You're like, that's it. And it's over. So it's part of the thing.
And that's Hollywood, baby. It's just Hollywood. Yeah, it's just come Hollywood. In and out, let's go.
Yeah, in and out. That's it.
Bing, you know, bang, boom, learn from a professional.
You work on it for me 2 weeks, and it shows up on screen for 1 second.
Whatever. Let's talk about the relaunch, because I know you're going to do, what is it, Eagle Force. You got to tell me about that, because I remember these as a kid. Your likeness is going to be used for Eagle Force.
Yeah, so there's this company called Fresh Monkey Fiction, and they decided to relaunch Eagle Force. In the 80s, there were these like two-inch metal figures, and they were trying to compete with G.I. Joe, but it never really took off. Apparently the license was out there, and he got it, and he was like, okay, I'm going to make these, but like G.I. Joe figures, like 4-inch, and he did it, but he made them modern. But all the fans of Eagle Force, they said, no, you got to make the old school figures, those guys. And so he's going to redo them, but his 4-inch figures, but just the Wave 1.
Yeah.
And so when I was talking to him about it, because he was asking me for some advice or whatever, like I said, the toy industry just works with everybody, and everybody's helping each other out. And I asked him, I was like, hey, there was a Wave 2 proposed. Are you going to make those?
Mm.
He's like, maybe. And I go, because you have to make this guy. And I showed him a picture of, I think his name was Pancho. And he was like,
oh, mi tío.
Yeah, it was. He was like this Mexican soldier. He had like the sombrero and like the bandolier. And he was like counterintelligence or something. I don't know. And I was like, are you going to make this guy? And he was like, not in today's climate. No way. Like, that's like super racist.
How dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you deny our heritage?
How dare you do that? You know, and it's Bill Murphy. That's the guy's name. So, you know, Bill Murphy's not going to make a Chicano. I was really bummed because I really wanted it. And so I told him, hey, what if I designed it? What if I designed it? And we say that it was done by Amaro Studios, by a Chicano making a Chicano. That should be cool, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
like a Mexican making a Mexican warrior, it should be okay. And he was like, oh yeah, let's do that. So then we started talking about that, and he's like, yeah, just go ahead and design it. So I designed it, and I was like, well, if I'm designing it, then, you know, he needs to look like a Mexican. I know no better looking Mexican than myself.
There you go.
So I put myself. I used my face.
The Da Vinci method.
Yeah, I put my face in there. And he was, and he loved it. He thought it was really cool. And so I didn't like the name Pancho, because that's like my wife's uncle.
His name is Sancho.
No, his name is El Toro.
Válgame Dios.
¿Cómo que no?
Pues el Torote.
That's right. So... So he's going to be El Toro now, and he'll be the, after the initial Kickstarter, there's like rewards.
Yeah.
He's the first reward.
Okay.
Him and a Native American warrior.
What's that guy's name?
Red Wing.
Red Wing.
Yeah. So those guys will be the first ones to be unlocked after the, you know.
Well, I want you to give them a shout out right now in a little bit, but what is your dream project, dream collaboration?
Well, to be honest, it was Thundercats.
Was it?
Yeah, because that was my cartoon growing up. That was what I love. And to actually, that one in He-Man, but for sure Thundercats, to actually work on Thundercats was amazing. That was my dream project. Like, I remember telling my wife when I told her, I was sitting there, I got the call, and then she goes, what happened? And I said, they want me to make the Thunder Tank. And she knew what that meant. She was like, no way. And I was like, yeah. And she goes, congratulations. And I was like, that's it. Could die happy now. I did Thunder Tank. I'm going to do the Thunder Tank. Work on Thundercats.
I'm going to ask you this just from one nerd to another nerd. Is your wife as nerdy as you? Or does she just put up with your nerdness?
She, she wasn't. When I first met her, she was just like a normal girl, you know, and now she's all into anime and she knows all this stuff. And like the other day, she said something about, it's because you look like a bantha. And I was like, that's awesome that you know what a bantha, like who knows what a bantha is.
Oh, man.
And, you know, like she's become a nerd, but she's still kind of not. But her thing is anime. She loves anime.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, shout out to your wife. I don't know her name, but Sarah. I mean, she sounds awesome.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Now, but
she's
I mean, amazing. If you've already done your goal, where do you have from here? What is the next goal? I mean, like, what? Where else can you take over? What can you do at this point?
Cool thing about having dreams is that if you realize a dream, you can dream another dream, and you just keep going to the next thing. And like, you know, for me, it was working on Thundercats and then Bill Murphy, and they were like, hey, let's do Eagle Force. And I was like, wow, I can have a figure made of myself.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's another dream. Like, hey, I get to have a toy, and now I could take that head and put it on a G.I. Joe, or I can put it on Han Solo's body, and I'll fly the Millennium Falcon with Chewie.
Yeah.
I'm, like, super excited about that.
I'm super excited for you. You're getting me excited.
Yeah.
Please tell us where we can find your links, because I know people are going to be looking for that.
Yeah. Well, the one that I post the most on is Instagram.
Okay.
And I'm Amaro_Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And you could find me there, and all my nerdiness is there.
Oh, I saw all the stuff. You were doing comics. You collect a bunch of stuff at the same time as much as you build. Like, you had all the great Star Wars stuff we were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, old school repaints. Like, you know, fantastic. Great work. I appreciate you. I appreciate the art. Thank you for being on the show.
Oh, no. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You know, please give your shout outs. Please, you know, tell your studios what's up. Tell all your people what's up. This is your time to shine.
You know, thank everybody. I want the fans and everybody for supporting me. And, you know, it's just, it's amazing. I remember when I got the job offer to go to Jazzwares in Florida, I got in a cab in New York. I had a suit on. I had my portfolio. I was driving to the toy building in New York, and I was thinking,
wait, there's a toy building?
There used to be. There used to be. Not anymore, but there was a toy building in New York, and I was driving. The driver picked me up to take me there, and I was like, man, I'm like this little Chicano kid from El Paso. Like, and now here I'm in New York, and it's just been an amazing ride. And it's, you know, all the fans and all the people that support the toy lines, and I, you know, I know it's hard right now with COVID and money, and so it's amazing that, you know, fans are still, you know, we're still collecting, and, you know, you guys are giving me that opportunity. So yeah, thanks to everybody, and Four Horsemen for giving me a shot, and Super 7, HBO Max, all these guys that, you know, like, that. It's been amazing. It's been an amazing ride.
Absolutely. You're amazing, brother, and I appreciate you. Thank you for being on EP Culture Beat, your source for the underground arts and culture of El Paso Juarez. You know, follow him, Joe Amaro Studios, right?
Yeah.
Thank you to the Alamo Draft House at 12351 Pelicano. You know, the big room over there. Make sure you check them out. Thank you, Alex. But, you know, on behalf of EB Culture Beat, your source for the underground, please like, follow, share, subscribe. Stay sweet, don't change. Love, Sucio. Thank you, Papa. I appreciate you, brother.